भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 86, entitled Arjuna Kidnaps Subhadra, Text 22 to 26.
Te Achyutam Praptam Akarnya Pauraha जानापदः नृप अभ्युः मोदितः तस्मै गृहीत अर्हण पणयः ते अच्युतं प्राप्तम् आकर्ण्य पौरा जनापदा नृप अभियोर्मुदितास्तास्मै गृहतहर्णापानयः ते अच्युतं प्राप्तमाकर्ण्य पौराजानपदा नृपा अभियोर्मुदितास्तास्मै गृहतहर्णापानयः तेचुतं प्राप्तं आकर्ण्य पौरा जानपदा नृपा अभियोर्मुदितास्तास्मै गृहीतारणापानयः अच्युतं प्राप्तम् आकर्ण्य पौरा जानापद नृपा अभियोर्मोदितास्तास्मै गृहीतारणा पानयः लेडीज ते अच्युतं प्राप्तम् आकर्ण्य पौरा जानापदा नृपा अभियोर्मुदितास्तस्मै गृहीतारणापानयः ते अच्युतं प्राप्तमाकर्ण्य पौरान् जानापदा नृपा तस्मै ते अच्युतम लॉर्ड कृष्णा प्राप्तम अराइव्ड आकर्ण्य हियरिंग पौरः द पीपल ऑफ द सिटी जानपाद एंड द विलेजेस नृपा ओ किंग अभियु केम फॉरवर्ड मोदितः जॉयफुल तस्मै टू हिम Grihita, holding, arhana, offerings to present to him, panayaha, in their hands. Translation, hearing that Lord Achyuta had arrived, O king, the residents of the cities and the villages of Videha joyfully came forth to receive him with offerings in their hands. Text 23. As soon as the people saw Lord Uttama Shloka, their faces and hearts blossomed with affection, joining their palms above their heads, they bowed down to the Lord and to the sages accompanying him, whom they had previously only heard about. Both the king of Mithila and Shrutadev fell at the Lord's feet, each thinking that the spiritual master of the universe had come there just to show him mercy. Text 25. At exactly the same time, King Mithila and Shrutadev each went forward with joint palms and invited the Lord of the Dasharas to be his guest, along with the Brahman sages. Text 26. Wanting to please them both, the Lord accepted both their invitations. Thus he simultaneously went to both homes, and neither could see him entering the other's house. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, Krishna visited Shrutadev and Bahulashva at the same time by manifesting himself in duplicate forms along with the sages. Thus King Bahulashva thought that Lord Krishna had come only to his house, leaving Shrutadev to return home disappointed. Shrutadev believed that just the reverse was the case. In Krishna, Srila Prabhupada remarks, quote, that Lord Krishna and his companions were present in both houses, although both the Brahmana and the king thought he was present in his house only, is another opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This opulence is described in the Bible scriptures as Vaibhava Prakash. Similarly, when Lord Krishna married 16,000 wives, he also expanded himself into 16,000 forms, each one of them as powerful as he himself. Similarly, in Vrindavan, when Brahma stole away Krishna's cows, calves, and cowherd boys, Krishna expanded himself into many new cows, calves, and cowherd boys. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Roop Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Tanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This is a very beautiful and interesting story. Siddha Goswami is narrating to all of us. One wonderful thing is that among the various 12 sages whose names are mentioned here, one sage is Siddha Goswami himself. That is very unique. I found that this is, in the previous verses, it said, aham. He also was there. So that's very wonderful, that he's a live witness to what actually happened. So it's always interesting to tell, I was there and this happened, like that. So it's a little innocent pleasure in saying that. This story has so many beautiful lessons, as of course all stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam are oceans and oceans of jewel-like realizations coming from the lips of the original speaker, Shukdev Goswami, and then elaborated even more further with churning of that ocean by Srila Prabhupada and his disciples. So here we are seeing something unique is happening, is that Krishna is in Dwarka, and you know, this whole festivity is going on where there is the solar eclipse, and therefore many, many people have come from all over, from Vrindavan, from Mathura, from Dwarka, and all the seas were present there. Now, the distance between Dwarka and Mithila is very long, very large. Dwarka is right here in the west, up there, right? Mithila is right far east. In fact, it is almost like Nepal outside the country. It's 1,339 kilometers, to be exact. It's a very large distance. That's across the country. 1,300 kilometers is not a small distance, right? And yet, we find Krishna has taken, I don't know whether you can say the word trouble, because for Krishna there is nothing like a trouble. Everything is joyfully performed for him. And yet he's taken the endeavor, I would say, to cross across the entire country to meet with two people. Now, generally, you know, when you compare with ourselves, we go to some place and you have find a friend is staying in the neighborhood and said, I was just happened to be here, came for shopping, and I just thought I'd say hello to you. Right? So then you just go to and say hello and say, how are you? I just happened to be here, and you try to finish 3-4 things in the same area. I'm going there, so might as well do this and this, and then meet them and then buy this and like that, right? But Krishna is right here and they are all there. So it is not just, he's not doing just by the way. He's not happening in that not in a geographical area at all. It's a specific, one-pointed, deliberate endeavor on Krishna's part to give his mercy to two wonderful, beautiful devotees whom he loves. And Krishna is not going to feel this as a botheration whatsoever, but he's going to very happily just cross across, and he's not going to go alone. He's going to go with a whole entourage of powerful sages. And we need to remember that they were not praying for this. That I wish, you know, Krishna comes to my home and like that. You know, you cry in distress and like, Krishna will come. Well, Shabari was crying for hoping that Ram would come. So she was anticipating Ram would come. And since she had her guru's, indication that Ram will come here many, many years later. So she was waiting in anticipation. But here we find that they are not anticipating. It is just Krishna's, it's called Abhigya and Swarat. Swarat means he is independent. Not independent, supremely independent. We are also independent, but we are not supremely independent. Minutely independent. So, out of his supreme independence, he is making his desire. I want to go. I want to go. And so that is very, very wonderful to understand. When we use the analogy of the magnet and the filings, you know, which you all say, oh, Krishna is like the magnet. Not the magnet, the supreme magnet. Which is because Krishna is all attractive. So he can attract the hearts of all living entities, and therefore to that extent the living entities are like iron filings. They may be either in their pure state or in their rusted state. Depends on how long they have been in the material world and how much they have covered over. Right? So if they are covered over very heavily, then the rust is so large that even though you can bring them so close to the magnet, sometimes, you know, the magnet is the same, but the rust is so heavy that it sort of does not attract too much. But here we find a reverse phenomena, which is very interesting. So this analogy is in that sense not a complete analogy, or that it is not that always the iron filing is attracted to the magnet. Here, the iron filing is attracting the magnet. Now, how small is the iron filing, right? And we have done all the experiment in physics, right? When you were in, I don't know what standard, maybe 8th standard or something, we used to have this magnet, and we were supposed to figure out the lines of magnetic force, right, from the north to the south. So we literally had paper poured, and we had a magnet, a bar magnet. There are round magnets, bar magnet, and then you put iron filings on the paper, and we actually remember seeing that there was actually they all went along a particular type of circuit from the north to the south, right? And so they were attracted. You put them all around on the paper somewhere, and then they just align themselves in the particular type of the magnetic field. So this is our childhood experience. And yet, we have never seen that an iron filing is so powerful to attract a whole magnet. That doesn't happen. One filing is, one hundredth of a milligram, and magnet is like a huge thing. And here, this is Krishna. This is Krishna, who's Vibhu. What kind of a magnet is that in terms of size, quantum, dimensions? And what is the iron filing? It is 1/10,000 tip of the hair. And that iron filing, which is so small, anu, shatabhagasya, shatadakalpitasya, tip of the magnet, tip of the hair, and that is attracting the huge magnet to travel 1,000 kilometers across the country. The magnet is getting drawn, as the whole magnet is getting drawn almost uncontrollably. Uncontrollably. Krishna is uncontrollably attracted whenever there is in any distant environment. Of course, nothing is distant for Krishna because Krishna is everywhere in that sense. So everything is within him, so he has no distance in one sense. And yet in his manifest Leela, he is here and he has to go there. So that's in the manifest Leela. And yet, to see that how Krishna can get attracted to anywhere in his creation, is in the spiritual world, of course, everyone there is a pure devotee. So everyone is mutually attracting each other powerfully. Right? And yet in the material world, if there's any small jivatma in any part of Krishna's infinitely large creation, which is consisting of multitude of universes, which are as large, as numerous as the bags of mustard seeds, in a goni. So how many mustard seeds in a goni? Nobody can calculate. No scientist can calculate that. Right? There are billions of... And within that universes, if there is one jivatma who is Krishna's pure devotee, Krishna will get attracted to him. Is that not beautiful to understand? This is the nature of Krishna. And this is the nature of Krishna's devotee. So the more when we say in the Gita Sloka that... what is that? Fourth chapter. Divyam. Janma karma chame divyam. Right? Krishna's karma and his birth is divine. It essentially means we need to understand the nature of Krishna. And we need to understand the nature of bhakti and a pure devotee. So, in general, we need to understand for a blossoming devotee who is going uphill on the path of Krishna consciousness, he needs to understand in great detail the nature of the material world also. Because unless we understand the nature of the material world properly, and what it entails, what is involved, what are the liabilities of staying in this material world for a long time, we won't really take shelter, we won't be able to really turn our face. The two birds on the same tree, one bird is always tasting the fruits of the tree which are sour and sweet. Right? So we won't be able to turn to the Paramatma in the heart and to him unless we really understand that this material world has nothing much to offer in terms of long-term pleasure. Right? It's very temporary. So along with understanding the material world, then of course we turn our face to understand Krishna's nature and then the nature of bhakti. When you understand these three natures properly, the material world, Krishna's nature and the nature of bhakti, then our knowledge about everything in this world is complete, thorough. So, why is it that the magnet gets attracted to the iron filing?
That's a very important, not only a question of physics, but a question of metaphysics. It's a metaphysical question, right? Which has, must be answered. So, among the various qualities of pure devotional service, there are six of them. Rupa Goswami enumerates in the Nectar of Devotion. Klishagni, Shubhada, one of them is Krishna Akarshani. Right? That pure devotion has the power to attract Krishna. Who has the power to attract everything and everything, all living entities in this material world? So one who, to whom everyone gets attracted, he has to get attracted to something else. How is it? How is it that he gets attracted to something else when everything has to get attracted to him? He is a soul, all attract, when he's all attract means every attractive element, everything which can potentially attract is in him. That means he's as almighty, means all might is in him. All knowledge means he has all knowledge is in him. There's no knowledge beyond him. There's no might beyond him. There's no attraction beyond him. If he's all attractive, that means every attractive element, and Krishna says in the Gita that everything which is attractive in the material world is just a spark of my splendor. So he's like the fire of attraction, and everything which is attractive, yadat vibhuti mas sattvam, mama tejomsa sambhavam, is very small. Some nice sunset, you know, nice bird, or you know, some mountains, ranges, and ice snow caps, and you know, whatever else, you know, some beautiful personality, whatever, right? It's just a spark of my splendor. So when if Krishna is all attractive, then everything is attractive within him, then how is it that they are attracted to something else? that is a very, very wonderful question, right? So then, we have to use the philosophy of achintya bheda abheda tattva, right? That there is everything within him, and yet something is out of him, something separate from him. That is Srimati Radharani, who is a person who even attracts Krishna. She is one with Krishna, and yet she is separate from Krishna. And that's the only way we can explain how Krishna can ever get attracted to something sort of which is not him. And yet it is him. That is Krishna's Ladini Shakti. And Ladini Shakti is a reservoir of all love. Krishna is a reservoir of all Shakti. He is a Shaktiman. And the power, Shakti means power. The power of love resides in toto. Like Krishna is all attractive in that sense. So Radharani also is a reservoir of something in toto. She is a reservoir of in toto of the power of love. Right? So the both of them are complete in themselves. And the Gaudiya understanding is so profound that the power of love is higher and will eventually subdue the beloved. Right? So when that love manifests even in its microscopic form, if Radharani is the reservoir, she is a mega, mega, mega macroscopic reservoir of that love. But even when she manifests that love in a microscopic, anuic form in the heart of any living entity, Krishna finds it irresistible. And meaning if he should cross 1,339 miles, he will still do that. Right? So that's the power of Shuddha Bhakti. How powerful is Shuddha Bhakti? That it can attract the all-powerful Krishna. And when we go in this understanding a little further, this is about talking about Krishna's nature to get attracted to. What is it in those two wonderful Vaishnavas which made their hearts so attracted to Krishna? What is it in them? Because if that we understand that, then we can endeavor to follow in their footsteps. And hopefully in some distant millennium of lifetime, we will be able to attract Krishna also. That is the hope by which we are all living and performing our sadhana bhakti. So, when it talks about Shrutadeva, this great Brahman, it says that he was
perfectly satisfied. That's the adjective given to his devotional character, that he was perfectly satisfied. And why is that mentioned there? Because he had every reason to be dissatisfied. Because he had nothing. When you don't have anything, it says that he was just getting something by, which is, you know, some basic maintenance, which was coming to him somehow or the other from somewhere, and he was just going on with that. He was living in a poor man's house, you don't have much furniture, you don't have much of money, you don't have any reserves, you don't have any LIC policies, you don't have any insurance, you have nothing of those sort, no health insurance, nothing, right? Then you are going to be very, very dissatisfied because you don't have so many which other people have, which is normal to have. To have a car is normal, to have good clothes is normal, to have a decent house is normal, to have insurance policies is normal, to have some reserve in the fund in the bank is normal. They're all normal things of life today, right? And yet, Shukadev had none of these things, and it says that he was perfectly satisfied. Not satisfied, but the adjective uses perfectly satisfied. That's in this translation, right? So what brings satisfaction? What brings satisfaction? And it says also that he was satisfied and he was very peaceful. In fact, there cannot be any peace without satisfaction. Can any dissatisfied person be peaceful? No. If you're dissatisfied, that means your heart is hankering for some gain. You're really unhappy because of what you don't have. And then there cannot be any peace of the mind in that situation. So the prerequisite for actually for being peaceful in this world, in the material world, is to practice the virtue of santosh, of satisfaction. Right? So that would mean that we have to stop hankering. The more we hanker, the more we add fuel to this dissatisfaction. So what was making him satisfied if he had nothing of this world? So there the answer comes in. That even if you are as poor as Shukadev, or as poor as Kulocha Sridhar, or as poor as Sudama Brahman, all these three people who are way below poverty line by economic standards, and yet they scaled high, very high in the graph of being so happy to the level of being in ecstasy. Right? These are, how can you understand this? If you don't have anything of this world around you, and yet you are experiencing ecstasy. On the other hand, we have great people who owned things, who owned so much, that means so much ownership was there with them, and yet complete dissatisfaction, lack of peace, lack of happiness. Right? The Shastra is about all these people, whether as Ravan or as Shishupal or Hiranyakashipu. They were great people who had tremendous ownership. The ownership of practically a universe. We talk about ownership of a flat, right? This is flat belongs to me. This ownership, you know, our ownership is our ownership. This is a rental flat. No, ownership. So, okay. That means I own this flat, 2 BHK, 3 BHK. Something is there to own, right? Householder is holding some house. Holding something. Householder. That's why it's called householder. We are in a rental place, you're not a householder because it's not, you're not holding it actually. It's held by the guy to it belongs to. If the ownership flat and you actually are a householder, you hold it in your hands till you're alive, you hold it, then you lose it. So, but imagine the scale of ownership from one house to one universe. Now, that's something which we can't imagine. We can't imagine owning the whole Bombay city or owning the whole of India
or owning the whole earth planet. You know, these are for a frog in the well. This is like too big to even imagine. You know, frog in the well, you can have ownership of, I have 3 flats, one in Aurangabad, one in Lonavala, one in Nigeria, and one in Beverly Hills in America. You may think 4 or 5 flats. But can you imagine a scale where you own the entire country or the entire planet? What would talk of owning the entire universe? The ant cannot think so large of how big the mountain is. We are like that ant. And yet a small ant like Hiranyakashipu actually owned the universe. And that's not theory, that's practical. It was there, it has happened in Satyuga a few million years ago. And yet, the most miserable person was Hiranyakashipu. Right? Completely miserable fellow. That means we have to draw some powerful conclusions from this understanding. We need to really take stock of why this phenomena takes place. How can a person living in with a million, you know, with hundreds of holes in his roof, like Sridhar Kaulavesha, be happy, and one who is living in the palace of Indra be unhappy? That means happiness is a phenomena which is completely beyond matter. Happiness of the heart is completely beyond matter. Happiness is a non-material entity. And no amount of matter, even the matter contained in a universe, that matter becomes immaterial to the soul. Right? But, on the other hand, why is that? Because it is not in line with our intrinsic nature. The soul is spiritual and the world is matter. It's a square peg in a round hole. They don't fit. It is so simple and yet it evades us all the time. And yet his understanding just completely is so evasive that we hear about it, we think about it, we read about it, we talk about it, but we never realize it. And we live completely in a world of grandiose illusion, rather. There's one psychiatric disease called as grandiose delusion. We learned that in medical college. In such a grandiose illusion that I can still be happy in this world. If I own and possess things of this world. And on the other hand, these examples are there about these poor people like Shudadev. It says they are completely happy, peaceful and satisfied. Because they repose their heart in Krishna. The Prabhupada's first book is so relevant to the world. Krishna is and always will be the reservoir of all pleasure. If you don't connect to the reservoir of pleasure, you are connected to the desert of the world. There once there is a reservoir, there is a desert. A desert, there cannot be water. Prabhupada talked about it right from the basic ISKCON first grade ABC training was this pleasure of the world is like a mirage. You chase it, it is beyond you. It's chase it, it's beyond you. You chase it, it's beyond you. The camel dies chasing for the water. So, let us, all of us, learn from the beautiful example of Shrutadev today some deep lessons that the heart, our hearts, and what is the heart? Heart is a place where the soul and the super soul reside. It's a residential quarters of ourselves and our Lord. They both reside in the region of the heart. Even the blade of grass has got no heart, no biological heart. Amoeba has got no biological heart. And yet they have a heart. Why? Because where the soul resides is the heart. It's not that the heart and the soul resides in that. It is a soul and the heart. Where the soul is, the heart. You see the difference? Right? So we should think that, you know, in that there's a heart and the soul reside within it. Right? I should always think like that, because, you know, those of us, you know, the biological training is the heart is there, it is pumping, boom, 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 and within the heart somewhere, we don't see it because it is so small, within the heart somewhere there is the soul. No. That understanding is incomplete. Because the blade of grass has got no heart, amoeba has got one cell, which is heart, lung, kidney, brain, all put in one cell. It's an amazing, amazing organism Krishna has made, how every function is done by one cell. It's like omnipotent cell. Like Krishna is omnipotent, so he can incorporate omnipotency in one cell, and it can reproduce. So there are reproductive organs, there are respiratory organs, there is excretory organs in just one cell. Krishna's omnipotency in one cell, that's amazing example, amoeba. Anyway, so where the soul resides is what where the heart is, and not the other way around. So the heart is by nature connected, affiliated intrinsically to the Supreme Soul Krishna. And unless a connection is made, so the whole question actually remains, what is the connection, what is the wire between the iron filing and the magnet? What is that connection? Right? And only if you to understand how to connect every soul of this world to the magnet that is Krishna, everyone will be connected to the reservoir of all pleasure. So the whole thing about preaching or book distribution or prasad distribution, everything which our movement does is basically about this connection principle. Because we can call it fancily as yoga. It's yoga. In the modern world, new age, yoga, yoga, yoga. Yoga of this, yoga of that, yoga, so many types of yoga. But it's all about, again, reconnection. And that connection with Krishna is only one. There's only one road to Krishna. There aren't many roads to Krishna. It's wrong to feel that there are so many ways to Krishna. No. There are other yogic principles that are given in the Gita, but they all have to ultimately lead to that one final road where all other roads converge, and then from that road you go to Krishna. And that road is bhakti. That connection with Krishna is through only one principle. The connection is through devotional service. Devotional service is the only paradigm which connects the lost soul to Krishna. And there is absolutely no other way of connecting with Krishna at all. Krishna does not get the prerogative to be connected to Him by any other process. Because He holds the prerogative. He is the master. He is the Lord. He is the controller. He controls what you will choose to connect to Him. And not you. Not the people of the world. Right? But He has chosen to be connected. He will give connection to only those people who come through the path of devotional service. Everyone else is millions of light years away. Panthastu koti shata vatsara sampragamyo. Millions of light years away from Krishna. Even if you are traveling at the speed of the mind, you are still very far away from Krishna. Even if you are perfected yogi, you have no connection with Krishna whatsoever. How beautiful is that? And that the acharyas just give you so easily. A pure devotee is such a powerful person. In a small frame of 5 feet, which was Prabhupada's height. A small man. When people would think about Prabhupada, people have not seen him before. Prabhupada is coming to London. People have not seen him. They would imagine an acharya who's like tall, big figure. But when you see him, he's really a small man, but towering personality. A small frame physically, but towering person. You just, when you have, what happens when you see a towering person? You feel very humbled in front of him. Oh, he is so big. You find a big man, he is so big. But everyone felt like that in front of Prabhupada. They felt, he was small physically, but everyone felt subdued the power of his aura. Right? A small frame person. And yet, they are so powerful, these acharyas, that they can give that connection to all living entities. All living entities. Like you have connection, the internet connection, right? Then they have this, people who give internet connection to various people in their particular area, right? These great personalities, the great souls, the great acharyas, they give connection to all living entities through the process of bhakti. And Krishna allows that to happen even if you just give him a simple leaf. It is not difficult to get connected with Krishna at all. How foolish if somebody were to accept the process of Jnana Yoga or, you know, Ashtanga Yoga. How foolish that would be in today's day and age. When we understand from the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures that that offers you no connection to Krishna whatsoever. Is the goal. He is Yogeshwar. But if you take a simple leaf, a simple flower, Krishna is happy. He is happy with that. That's what he asks. And that simple flower, we are offered with devotion. Yeah? So that is the glory of Shrutadev. That he had a small deities in his house. And the king had his own deities. What was the king's glory? Why would Krishna get attracted to the king? Because it says in the shloka that he was free from false ego. That means even though the king of Mithila, which is a big man of the world, he was practicing the virtue of being non-possessive. He had no ego that he was possessing the entire kingdom under his control. So people who have much, they must practice the virtue of non-possessiveness. And for people who think they have little, they have to practice this virtue of Shrutadev to be satisfied. And if you are somewhere in between, you must have both qualities. Little bit of non-possessiveness, little bit of satisfaction. I think most of us are somewhere in between. We are either kings of worlds or we are living in a jhopadpatti with holes, you know, on the roof. We are living in decent apartments, you know, wherever we are, Valkeshwar, Mira Road, wherever it is. Right? So we need to have this property of being accepting that yes, it is Krishna's. Why don't we accept this? Humility is equal to honesty. Humility is, you know, we might think, fine, humility is such a great, difficult way to practice. Humility, my God, humility means, you know, we have to crush the false ego. But actually, humility in one sense, humility is a beautiful topic to think about and, you know, ruminate, and the damage of humility are so beautiful and magnificent. And virtue is so magnificent in itself. As we know, that quality is one which attracts Krishna and nothing else. So it's something which we have to really think about deeply. If that's one quality which attracts Krishna, then it's something worthy of our deep meditation. But one way of looking at humility is that humility is just being honest. Just being honest. Do you really possess this body? Is it your body? Be honest. If something is yours, you have control. And how many of us have control over our bodies? Well, we don't have any control over our bodies. We don't control our digestion, our passing of air, blinking of our eyes, heartbeats. What control we have over our body? And most of all, do we have control over our obesity? People are gaining weight. How much they are trying to lose weight? One lady told me, doctor, I would not mind dying in my attempts to lose weight, but I want to die thin. And she was serious. She was serious. She was not joking with me. She said, I want to die if that be, but I will die thin. I don't want to die fat. That's that amount of obsession obesity has created in this world. Really? A fat lady is the most miserable lady today. And if she has
million Mercedes in her garage. If she's fat, she's extremely unhappy. And she will go to any extent and having her own stomach cut into pieces through bariatric surgery to lose weight. Anyway, that's a different topic. Right? So, this is the beauty of Krishna consciousness, that simply by practicing humility, being honest that this is not my body, these things don't belong to me, this house I'm staying in doesn't belong to me, because very soon I will die and this house will still remain here, and some other occupant will come, or it will be sold by my children to somebody else, or they will either stay there and they will sell it after they die. This house is going to go to somebody else, and after a few years it will go to redevelopment, and there will be another building here, and down the line they will maybe go into dust and then it will be destroyed. That was how that the house is mine. It's just being honest, this house is not mine. I'm staying in this house for a while, that's true. Therefore this body also is like a house to me. I'm staying in this house for a while, and then this house will be destroyed on the funeral pyre. So humility is actually just being genuinely honest. That Krishna, you possess everything, because everything is under your control. Maya dakshina prakriti, the whole material creation belongs to you. Right? So the principles of bhakti are simple, sublime, and yet very profound. It's very profound. Like E mc square is a simple formula. E, energy, m for mass, c square, velocity. And any child can understand E to mc square. But the profundity of that realization of mass equal to energy, where it falls at the speed of light, is a profound, earth-shaking, monumental, revolutionary realization of one scientist. Right? And yet, if you were to just simply understand these simple truths of life, we can be so happy. Thakur Bhaktivinoda sings in just one line. In one line, he gives the formula for happiness. One line. And the whole world is struggling to understand, where is happiness? Where is peace? Where is satisfaction? And they are trying so many things. Bhakti Thakur Acharya can say it in one line. A half a line. Right? Jeev Krishna Das, E Vishwas, Korle Toar Dukhonai. In one line, the power of one line of a realized Acharya. I mean, think about this line. Within our hearts, that I can be eternally free from all suffering for all times to come if I realize one truth and live by this truth. Not just think about this truth or talk about this truth or read about this truth, but try to live by this truth actually in this world. If I can live by this truth, that Jeev, that is me, I am Jeev, is Krishna Das. Live in the world as a servant of God. And since God resides in the heart of all living entities, I am a servant of all living entities. And try to serve them in the way I can. And therefore meat eating is automatic. I don't eat meat because the Lord is in the heart of the cow and the pig and the goat. And I don't kill them. So all simple things become very simple. I don't hurt anybody. I'm not jealous of possessing somebody else's property because, it's not mine. Lostravat, it becomes like lostra, something which belongs to somebody else. Right? So, Thakur Bhaktivinoda is so beautiful and so worshipable by all of us, because he's giving us the gamut of an insolvable problem of this creation in one line. Right? That's the profundity of the relation of a pure soul. Right? That's an Acharya who can tell infinite scriptures in one line. Jeev Krishna Das. A Vishwas. We don't have Vishwas. That's the problem. The problem is not in this knowledge. The problem is this Vishwas part is, where do you get that from? The struggle is to get that A Vishwas. Stuck. That we are stuck with that Vishwas. Shraddha is not there. Well, doesn't matter. Doesn't really matter. Let's live every day. I try to live a little bit on the principle of being servant of God. You may not have complete vishwas, implicit faith. Vishwas means implicit faith. You may not have implicit faith, but at least somewhere we can deal with other people like, Prabhu, how can I serve you? You know, we say that, right? That means you're trying to live with that principle. How can I serve you? And you get some service, you express gratitude. Oh, I am a servant. Someone give me some service to worship the deity, to go for preaching, do some book distribution, make some prasad, you do some distribute. Something people gave me, some president, some commander, some in charge. I get a service. Oh, I am a servant. I got some seva. A simple thank you of the heart. Thank you for that. So can we live with this principle? Having a blind man little bit here and there, holding his hand across the you know, the traffic. Just some simple things. Live like a servant and not like the master. Right? And I'm not the master of anything. Ekala Ishvara Arasabha. Arasabha includes Brahma and till down all the line. Everybody from Brahma down till the end. Arasabha Bhritya. Right? So we can understand these principles of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, live by the principles of Sutadeva and Bahulashwar, that they all lived their life in this way, that we are simply Krishna Das. And then, that is the only way to be happy. We need to be convinced of this, that there's absolutely no other way to be happy in this world unless we unlessly live and realize this principle that I am Krishna Das. Kole tu ar dukho nai. If you don't realize this, then sirf dukho hoy. If you don't realize this, only dukho hoy, then therefore Krishna says, this is dukhalayam ashashvata. Then only dukho hoy. That's all. Either it is this or that. Today, children of the internal energy of the Lord, as servant, you are in an ocean of unlimited bliss and pleasure. And you take shelter of the external energy of the Lord, then only kevala dukkha hoy. All that we need to do is just make this deep conviction of the heart to take shelter of Krishna's internal energy in the form of the holy name, in the form of Krishna's devotees, in the form of Krishna's deities, in the form of Krishna's scripture, and live as a servant. If we do that, we are, even though we are a small anu, we will be part of an ocean of unlimited bliss. Anandam ambudhi vardhanam. Not only ambudhi, but ambudhi ka bhi vardhanam. Only if you live by this principle. That we are giving our life for that. We are living, our existence to understand this principle of how we are simply, we are nothing. We were nothing, will be nothing ever other than Krishna's eternal servants. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, any comments? Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavat Purana ki jai.